question being raised with regards to the way it's being framed or stated is, what is the benefit of keeping the halacha? I'm not sure if that's the meaning of the question there, whether it's the halacha per se, or more generally, what's the benefit of the mitzvahs? At least we should start with that. That's an important point. Many religious Jews wouldn't even accept the notion of the question that there is any real benefit other than that you're being obedient to the will of God. However, we don't maintain that. The Rambam, not all the textual commentators, and of course it's based on the Torah itself, that the Tov Loch Kol Yevam, that the ordinances that God rendered incumbent upon us to perform are not arbitrary. If a person maintains that they're purely arbitrary, then that's negation, that's a fear, that's heresy. The Rambam points to this out, that the Torah itself says that you shvartem lasitim osam, you shall guard them, keep them, ki yichorach masam, uvinasam, uleinei am, because that is your wisdom and discernment in the eyes of the nations. Who will hear these statutes, and they hear about these laws, they'll say, Rakam Chacham Benaron, Hagayah Gadol Hazeh, that this is a wise and discerning nation. So therefore the Rambam makes the point, if you were to maintain that these laws, these mitzvahs, or these chukim are purely arbitrary, and we really can't discover any benefit in them, any reason for them, and we just do them because it's God's command, then how is it possible to say of such a system that when other people hear about it and inquire about it, they're going to be astounded at the wisdom of it? That's an impossibility. The wisdom of it is that it makes sense, it helps, it's beneficial, they'll see all the benefits, and so on and so forth. That itself, that's just one of many proofs that possibly presupposes the fact that this is a system which, when it's uncovered what the real benefits are, is going to be make such a powerful impression that even the nations, that is, even people that aren't Jewish, without any predisposition towards a favorable attitude, are going to be extremely impressed. There's, of course, many other reasons. If a person does not maintain that the mitzvahs have benefits and purposes and are rational, then you have to ask yourself a question. What did God give them to? What's the point? And to say that they're not rational is really disparaging. The Rambam also makes this point. What would you say about an ordinary governor or a ruler or king who made a system of laws for his subjects to live by, and this didn't make any sense? They were irrational, contrary to reason. So people would hold them in very low esteem. Yet, to say the very same thing about the Creator, the Melech Malchim Malchim, the King of Kings, that he gives to mankind and obliges us to keep the system, which is not an easy system to keep, which demands a tremendous amount of effort and energy and study, and it consumes most of your life if you take it seriously, and there's no purpose, there's no benefit, there's no rhyme or reason. How can you say anything like that? The question that arises, in a general way, if we can demonstrate this point. Obviously, there are 613 commandments, so that's a separate study. Of course, we maintain that if a person would make the effort to study all the commandments, he would discover the benefit. There's a category that would be exceptions. Not that they don't have tremendous benefits, but they are hidden. The chukim, the statutes. That's not the bulk of the commandments. The fact is that it's hidden, and the utility, the purpose, the benefit is not obvious on the surface. But it's there, and it's something which requires profound study. And Shem Chachamim will discover the reason for it. That's one category of the law, but by and large, we're maintaining that the overwhelming, if you remove the chukim, the statutes, the majority of the laws of the Torah don't fall into that category, and each one of them is a benefit and a purpose. So the question is being raised, if we could just demonstrate that in a general kind of way. The benefit of mitzvahs is, well, a number of things. But essentially I would say that the purpose of the mitzvahs is to, so to speak, transform an individual from being who lives according to their natural flow of their instincts into a being that is living with the purpose, and the purpose is to act in accordance with chachma, to pursue wisdom. The true purpose of a human being in this earth is to pursue wisdom, to obtain wisdom. That's the purpose, that's the fulfillment. Each creature that God created was designed with a certain nature, and its purpose is to fulfill that nature. And we maintain that the essence of human nature is the possession of the soul, which is not a physical phenomenon, and which gives man the capacity to understand abstract principles, ideas, knowledge, and thus ways to form a relationship with the Creator. That's the purpose. And of course, if a person doesn't acknowledge this as the purpose and maintains that man is just a more advanced animal, and his purpose is to engage the animal side of his nature and to use the intelligence to facilitate that, then it's an argument. Then, of course, he shouldn't do this first. If, however, it means anything, and if this is the real essence of human existence, then it is extremely important that a person live in accordance with a system. The way that a person is structured, you're dealing with instincts, with a drive, which is very, very powerful. And there are certain individuals that are different. There are certain individuals that are much more inclined towards reason and self-control and discipline by nature. But by and large, the majority of people are not disposed towards that type of thing. The overwhelming majority of people do not recognize this and will follow their fantasies, their natural instinctual desires, unless there's extraneous obstacles. That is to say, a person has no choice, has to make a living, so he has to restrain himself. And I think most people aren't going on stealing because it doesn't work. So then the person will train himself, will have maintain certain skills, will have a certain discipline, get it on time, get the job, get along with people, and so on and so forth. Well, there you see that in order to accomplish anything which is essential to human existence on any level, there's got to be a system. We all live according to a system. The only thing is that the purpose of the Torah system is designed not just in terms of the physical necessities of life. You could see, for example, athletes, baseball players, football players, in order to achieve a specialized objective, there's got to be some regimen. They all have laws they have to live by. Now, if they're good laws, if they're intelligent, then each one of them, in a different way, is going to facilitate the goal. Whether it be telling you what foods you have to avoid, or keeping your weight under control, how much exercise you have to do, what type of activities you have to do to keep up the skills, and so on and so forth. Now, since those people maintain, for this purpose, that the ultimate objective is to play football, so all these rules that they institute have that objective. That's what justifies them. But if you don't accept that, that football is important, so then the whole system has no meaning. But everybody has to agree that in order to achieve an advanced type of an objective, which is not automatically in line with human nature, something which requires a lot of effort and cultivation, then a person needs a system. If you leave a person free and tell the person, look, the whole essence of your life is really not to follow your instincts, you use your mind and pursue a relationship with God. Well, there are some people that have the capacity to do so. First of all, you have to recognize that the tremendous amount of learning and knowledge involved. Which is Torah. There have been individuals like Avraham Avinu, the others, who achieved the objective by using their own reason, their own study, their own knowledge. And the ideas were correct, that God related to them when they reached a certain level. The idea of a system is really for the bulk of mankind. The bulk of mankind is not on the level of these few individuals, the Avraham Avinus and the Rambams and so forth. So if you're going to do something which is going to be helpful to mankind, you need a system. A system which contains two major elements. The knowledge, the learning, which is of all the various foundations that are the foundation of the foundations. Because if you're not rooted in constant learning and constant knowledge, then you're just living in instinctual existence. You're going to follow the fantasies. You can live fantasy life, which is a wasted life. But you maintain that even that is not enough. There's got to be mitzvahs, commandments. Commandments, in my opinion, have two major, or perhaps three major purposes, depending on how you want to do the counting. Each one of them causes you to confront emotions within you, and not to just allow them to rule you, but to overcome them. For example, I'll take a case, which I think illustrates this point. The Torah says that if you should see the animal of your enemy fallen by the road, or another example, if you see the object, well, it's an old stick-to-look object, whatever. Because there's other obligations. If something's fallen, you know, you have to restore it, you have to help the person pick it up. But let's just take the case of a lost object. In general, what would most people say if you're in the street and you see somebody's object? A person has obviously lost something. Do you have an obligation? Now, in my opinion, in most cases, from a civil standpoint, I don't think you have any obligation. To the contrary, you might even be able to take it or keep it. I don't know what the laws are. I don't know if the laws are finders keepers, or I don't know if you find somebody's wallet. If you find somebody's wallet and it's got their name and address in it, and you don't return it, I don't know if that's a crime in America. I'm not sure. I would tend to doubt it. Yeah, in halacha, you have an obligation. There's such a thing as a aveda, something which is lost. The general obligation is that, assuming it's something which is identifiable, so I'm not getting into the technicalities now, it's something which could be identified. If you are to advertise, you have to take care of the object, bring it to your house, then you have to publicize, you have to advertise to the best of your ability to find that lost, and then your responsibility is not fulfilled until you return it. And this itself already forces you to live on a completely different level. Because from the standpoint of the natural emotions, your desire is simply to continue. You don't want to be bothered, you don't want to stop. You're just instinctual. Of course, if it's your object out there, then you're going to be upset that nobody wants to return it to you. But if somebody else's object out there, then you're going to be upset that your desire to get home and drink a beer and watch TV is going to be interfered with. So then you're just watching on a purely instinctual, emotional level. It's an animalistic level. The objective of this mitzvah would be two purposes, the dual objective. One is the well-being of society. That if everybody will show the same regard for other people's property as they would want for their own, that this is going to remove a tremendous amount of the friction and hatred in society. It'll increase, enhance the feelings of friendliness and brotherhood. Everybody's always talking about, everybody always bemoans the fact that people don't care about people. Like, yeah, that's true, they bemoan it, but they also bemoan the fact that somebody else is the most object in front of me, and I should have to stop and bother with it. So they're not living with a consistent principle. They're living in a state of contradiction. But the Torah goes even further. And the Torah says, in a different place, if you should see the object of your enemy in the way as you're going, as you're traveling, then you're obligated, you can't turn away from it, you have to pick it up, and you have to return it. The lost animal of your enemy, mentioned of your enemy. So of course the question arises, That's a good Chumash question. Why did it point out the indeed, the Gemara maintains that you're supposed to have two cases where someone's animal has fallen and needs help. One is your enemy, one is your friend. You're supposed to help your enemy before your friend. This is something that goes absolutely contrary to most people's feelings. So there too, you see, the Torah is telling you that just because you feel a certain way about something, there's no guarantee that it's the correct way. You don't live according to your feelings. That's precisely the point. The point is that whatever person stops and is able to get outside of his own immediate emotional desire, and you can see a larger framework, you can recognize a principle, an abstract principle, and act in accordance with it, that's a high level. It's a high level, you're there all alone. That also reinforces for you the idea of God. You can be out there alone on the road, and you see a lost object, and there's nobody else around, so no one's going to know that you were there and bypassed it. And even if it should be something of your friends, and later on your friend is saying they lost something, this and that, and even if, you know, they found out that you were in the general vicinity, you could always stay in the city. So you can always pretend. One of those things that depend upon the fear of God. The only thing that will protect you over here is the fear of God. So this is a mitzvah which enhances that element, that one's obedience, one's behavior, in terms of doing the right thing, should not simply be a response to the social pressure. You see people behave differently when they're in public. People do a lot of things differently. Things you wouldn't do if there was in a group. You may take some, you know, refuse or whatever it is. You finish eating something in a bed, a few papers, so you shouldn't throw it on the floor or in the street. You shouldn't just throw it on the street. You should hold it and wait until the garbage can. You shouldn't leave it in the street. That's wrong. But most people don't care. They wouldn't do it if they were walking with a bunch of friends. In fact, if they were walking with a bunch of friends and somebody else did it, they would criticize the person. To indicate that they are different, they're in a very high level. However, the very same person walking alone is too lazy, he probably would throw it in the street. Most people. Unless the person is really on a level where they live according to justice, according to truth, and it's based upon their relationship with God, not based upon social phenomena, social opinion. In addition, the Torah mentioned the enemy, because the real benefit of the mitzvah is not so much in the case of your friend. In the case of your friend, there's a lot of emotional incentives. It's your friend. Aside from the mitzvah, but you can curry favor with the person. The person will be grateful to you, and the person will do the same thing for you in return, if the situation should arise. However, the real perfection is in the case of your enemy. That's why the Torah says you do the enemy first. Because the enemy does, it goes absolutely contrary to your emotion. You dislike the person. You're very happy that this person is having a problem. You don't want that fits in perfectly with your fantasy. That since you don't like him, this person is no good, and bad things should happen to this person. You have a bunch of false ideas associated that you bring to the picture. Then to put all those aside, to put aside these emotions and deal with the situation purely in terms of rationality in a situation where it hurts to do so, that's the real perfection. The real perfection of the mitzvah is when it's forcing you to confront certain very powerful, deep-seated emotions that, if they're not dealt with, will make it very difficult for a person to reach a high level of perfection. That's one example. That's the general rule, that all of the mitzvahs have a number of purposes. One is that the discipline factor. Every mitzvah causes you to be disciplined and organized. You can't just follow your emotion, passion, the attentive instinct. So you just want to eat, you just want to, why do most people eat? Just to satisfy desire. That's it. Very little thought goes into it. And this reinforces the idea that the whole purpose of life is an instinctual, physical gratification. No, we have a system of construct to take that instinct and utilize it as an opportunity to grow in terms of your level of functioning as a human being. Before you eat, you gotta think. You gotta make decisions. You gotta prepare. You gotta learn. You have to be involved in the world of context. And then you may have a desire for a particular kind of food. But you have to withdraw and say, no, I can't even have that. So all the mitzvos function in that area. They cause you to deal, they put you in a conflict between what your mind tells you is correct and what your instincts desire. They also cause you to become more involved in the world of Torah. Because in order to keep the commandments, you have to know. It's the world of knowledge. So it reinforces Torah. And in general, the whole system of mitzvos, which are of course the most important mitzvah, is Talmud Torah Keneged Kulam. The person who lives in accordance with this system will fulfill to the highest possible level the objective of human existence, the purpose, which is, from a practical standpoint, to be a true human being. That is to say, one whose determining factor, the governing force in your existence, is your mind. That's how we define a real chacham. You remember when we were discussing the two different brachos? I said, a chacham is not someone that has a tremendous amount of knowledge of an area. A chacham is one who has a certain attitude towards life. He approaches every area from the standpoint of the chacham. What does chacham say in this area? That's what it says initially, Amor l'chachma achosihi, stand to wisdom, who are my sister. That it is a certain type of closeness to chachma. The person is in every area that they get involved in is through chachma. That's the, and it's not just for an extraneous acquisition. It transforms you by making that the governing reality, and your whole personality is molded in accordance with it. That's the mitzvah. The person does the mitzvahs, but does them intelligently and correctly, not perfunctorily, because of the benefits, you just do it perfunctorily. All the ideas that are associated, secondarily, we have mitzvahs that are associated with tremendous ideas. The mitzvahs pertaining to the Pesach, for example. Ramban says, all of the ideas that are included, the ideas of creation, the ideas of divine providence, that God intervened for certain purposes in this world, recounting all of the various events, it's a world of ideas. The mezuzah, which causes us, like the Rambam says, one should be very, very careful concerning the mezuzah, because the great significance of the mezuzah. What does that mean, the great significance? It means to say that a person, when you go back to daily activity, you get caught up in the world of Hevel, so to speak, the rat race. You can't help it, you're consumed by it. That's where we are. What world are you in? Well, what world are you in right now? Because the world keeps changing. When you're learning tomorrow and you're pursuing abstract ideas, you're in the world of ideas, knowledge, and truth. But then you leave and you go to work and you become involved in a completely different world than I can tell you. So a person needs constant reminders. That's why strategically placed the door, when you leave the house, when you enter the house, there's something meant to remind you. What? What the two parshios? The Shema, the Ahavta, the Amoy and Shemoa, the fundamental ideas of life, that a person always has to remind himself of them. Before he goes outside the house, he goes to the social realm, and then he comes into the house. But this is the real purpose of the house. This is the real purpose of existence. So there's profound ideas. As we've seen, everything in Judaism is profound ideas. Even something which seems to be a simple thing, a blessing you make upon a single wise person. But then there are two different categories. You have to use your mind, you have to think, you have to analyze. The Shema, the recitation of the Shema in Esrei, every aspect of Judaism forces a person to transform, to always be involved in transforming himself from an instinctual being into a rational being whose purpose is to search for the knowledge of a good oracle. All
right. That's to go on the internet, right?
Yeah, there's the internet.